Welcome to Career Tools. Fitting and reporting requirements. Here we go. Thanks, Wendy, for allowing me the privilege of being on Career Tools this week for you. It's a unusual thing for me, and I appreciate it, so I'll try not to stink it up too bad.
As if.
So we're going to talk about reporting requirements and kind of fitting those requirements into your daily work.
Yeah, I read something today that apparently there was some kind of survey, and it said people take 4.6 hours a week to prep for their staff meeting to report on their work, which if you're taking 4.6 hours, you're doing it wrong.
4.6 hours once a week to prepare for reporting during a staff meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, that just doesn't sound right. Well, if that's the standard, then I'm absolutely doing something wrong. So I'm not taking that much. And it might be obvious in the way I run the staff meetings, but in any case, before we go on, let me share and I'm not even going to make it a long story. I'm not, it could be a 10-minute discussion. We're not going to do that. I will tell you, though, early on in my career, after getting out of the Army, I quickly got in a position where I was a team lead of a development organization, right? So I had two or three people reporting to me as a team lead. And reporting just drove me crazy because at the time, my thought was, look, do you want me to do the reporting or do you want me to do the flipping work, right? Yep. And I've learned since then, and I'm sure you're going to share with us, that's not a great way to think about it. But that's the way it felt to me. Like, let me do the work and maybe the reporting won't be so necessary.
I did it too. I managed to say it out loud, which was quite stupid. But as soon as you become a manager or as soon as you become responsible for other people's work, you soon realize how disconcerting it is not to know where stuff is and what's going on with it and how it's going, and that you want to know more than weekly. Nobody ever reports enough, and being professional means supporting your boss, and supporting your boss means actually reporting so that they don't have that insecure feeling of, I have no idea where this is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, supporting your boss means reporting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't get the choice between completing the work and reporting it, right? You as a professional, you not only have to do the work, but you have to keep your boss up to date.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what are we going to talk about today?
So the outline is include time for reporting in your estimates. For regular reporting, put time on your calendar. Report more often than needed to make it easier. That's going to freak some people out. And don't make too much automatic.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to hear about the too much automatic, because I like automatic stuff.
You like automatic,
I
right?
I do like automatic.
Yeah, all you people who can code, you're like, but I can make a script. But there's some downsides to making a script, and we'll get there.
Okay, so include time for reporting in your estimates. I assume somewhere in there that means that actually there's not real work and there's reporting. Like, reporting is actually work. And I imagine you're going to say, like, you could actually put stuff on your calendar to give you time to actually do the reporting. You don't have to do it in secret, or you don't have to do it in your off time or in the evenings. You can literally, reporting is work.
Yeah. And if you're estimating we've got another cast about estimating projects and about breaking them down into smaller and smaller pieces. And one of the things you need to include in those pieces is 20 minutes for reporting. For every 8 hours you work, maybe 20 minutes for reporting. Or maybe it depends on how easy the reporting is and how bad, but you could start with 20 minutes and then see how it goes. And you might not need the whole 20 minutes, but it's better to have 20 minutes than not put it in your report, not put it in your estimate at all, and then think, like you just said, I have to report, I'll have to do it when I'm at home tonight, or I'll have to do it over the weekend. And one of the big things about projects is delivery on time. And you don't get to delivery on time unless the work is finished. And part of finished is having reported on it.
We've said this many, many times on the Manager Tools cast, and I'm sure you've talked about in Career Tools. It's not enough to do the work. You have to let people know you've done the work. And that's one of the purposes of reporting, is to let people know that it's been done and to what standards. Does that just mean simply sending out an email, or is there more to it than that?
It depends on the job that you're doing. It depends on the people that you're doing it for, and it depends on how regularly you're reporting. So when I was a recruiter, I used to report to the hiring manager every 2 days on the process. It was just my standard. I knew if I reported every 2 days, they wouldn't come to me and say, what's going on? So all I needed to send was an email with one paragraph. This is what's happened in the last 2 days. And that would be sufficient. If you're on the kind of product, a project that's got a weekly status meeting and you need to report on that, you probably need to do something more than just one paragraph, because the tasks that you've done over a week is different to what I would have done over a couple of days. And if you have a monthly status meeting, you're going to have to prepare probably something that's 10 or 15 minutes of part of that monthly status reporting, and you'll probably need half a day or a whole day to prepare for that. So it depends on the how frequently you're reporting, what that report will look like. And the more frequently you're reporting, the smaller it needs to be.
I would guess as well, my experience is at least that, you know, it's not only important to work out with your boss what the standards are relative to the work you're doing. You know, if you're delivering code, for example, right, there's standards relative to number of bugs and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? But it also might be useful to have a conversation with your boss as to what the standards are relative to the reporting you do. No need to guess about it. To ask your boss, okay, boss, you've given me this project. It's going to take me 2 months to get it done. You know, what kind of reporting do you expect? What's the quality? What do you want to see in that reporting, and how often do you want to see it? I don't know. Just saying, might be a good question to ask.
It might be a good question to ask. Yeah. And if you don't think that your boss is approachable or will give you a good answer, then think about DISC and what style your boss is, and that will give you a clue as to the level of detail and how you might want to do that reporting. A high D, you probably want to send them an email in bullet points. A high I, you probably want to stop by and say, hey, just wanted to update you on what's going on. A high S, you want to make sure that you've told them about the conversations you've had with other people and that the relationships are going smoothly. A high C wants a long email with lots of detail. So each style, even if they all say, I want you to report once a week, you can still think about their style in the method that you use to report.
Yeah, that's a great point. And for those of you who haven't listened to our podcast on DISC, D-I-S-C, it'd be a great idea to go do so. It's a very, very powerful tool and easy to use. And Winnie just gave an example of the value of understanding DISC and people's tendencies and their behavioral tendencies. Okay, so that said, I know a lot of people who, you know, they know they need to do reporting. It always seems like 2 minutes before the report is due, they're scrambling to get the report done. Or, you know, God forbid, it's late and their boss gives them a call and say, hey, where's that report? I'm getting ready to go in with my boss. Where's your status report? It's on its way. I'm working on it. And of course, working on it means they're opening up their laptop as they're speaking to their boss to get ready to work on it. So how do we handle that problem?
The report that's due Friday night at close of business that actually gets in on the first at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, because that's what Friday close of business means, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why on Manager Tools, we never say to give a deadline of close of business. Right? It's always a specific time and date. Okay, any case, what do we do about that?
Well, for regular reporting, put time on your calendar. So if you know that you have to report once a week to your manager or once a month, or you have to have updated some spreadsheet every day, put that time on your calendar. And, you know, there's lots of things that we don't like doing where it comes to reporting. Expense reporting, I used to hate. There was something about having to fill in those columns and look out the receipts, and it all had to be done in triplicate, and then the receipts had to be photocopied 3 times, and then they had to be stapled in the right order. It used to drive me crazy.
Well, you're lucky. I used to have to mimeograph.
Really?
So it just tells you how old I am. Okay. So consider yourself lucky. You had a photocopier. Come on. Really? Seriously?
So the way to do that is, one, to do it more frequently than is necessary, which we'll come to in a minute, and also to put it on your calendar. And my trick is to put it on my calendar and then follow it with something I like to do. So I would put it on my calendar at 11 o'clock because I really like going to lunch. Or I would put it on my calendar first thing in the morning, so it was something that was done. I'm most awake first thing in the morning, you know, straight after the first coffee. It's probably going to go fastest. And then I'd feel like I really accomplished something for that day. And the rest of the day would usually go smoothly.
No, or you could put it on your calendar just before a meeting with me, since you know, and then your meeting with me would be kind of like a little bit of a reward. You know,
a bonus.
A bonus. There you go. No, we're not. You know, if you want to talk about bonuses, we're going to have to talk about that later.
Offline, right. I think the answer is just no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so whatever, anything that you don't like doing, follow with a reward. That's basic human behavior. That's nothing. There's no secret the manager tools just told you. That's, you know, reward yourself for doing things you don't like doing. It's just a secret of adulthood, I guess.
Yeah, I love that. I should do that more often. I guess for me, like, I like problem solving. And so for me, I would put a particular problem I'd like to spend time on after the report is done, right? So it's just my way of getting things done.
And the good thing about an incentive like that is that there's a reason to do it more quickly. So when you put it on your calendar, when you put a task, a reporting task on your calendar, if you know it normally takes you around an hour, like, put it on your calendar for 50 minutes and gradually bring that time down, because we know that work expands to fill the time available. And if you have 55 minutes on your calendar, you will take 55 minutes. But one of the secrets of cutting that down is not just to race yourself, which all the high Ds who are competitive are like, yes, I'm going to be quicker every week. But if you're a person who likes problem solving or has something really good to do afterwards, then the idea of, you know, if I can get this done in 20 minutes, then I get an extra 40 minutes to play with those numbers or to think about that problem or to go visit someone and talk to them about something I'm trying to solve or some idea I have, you've got even more incentive, not only to get it done, but also to do it more quickly.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and if you don't like reporting, I don't know a lot of people who just wake up in the morning, they can't wait to do reporting. You know, the shorter you make it, the less painful it is. So challenge yourself to make it shorter each week. Get it over with. You mentioned another idea of yours that I thought was pretty interesting, which is reporting more often than you need to. Like, now that's frankly not the first thing that comes to my mind. Like, I hate doing reports. So instead of doing it, you know, once a month, I'm going to do it every week. That's just not something
that
I think.
That seems like insane, right?
It does. So explain yourself, woman. What are you talking about?
So the thing about monthly reporting I found was that if I had to start remembering what had happened on the first of the month, on the last day of the month, it was a lot of brain power, and I had to go back through my calendar and I had to go back through my emails, and it took longer. And, you know, the spreadsheet's got more updates in it, and the more updates there are, the more likely there is to be an error. And the more you dread it too. If you know something's coming in 3 weeks, then you're thinking, oh God, next week, oh God, it's reporting week. And, you know, everybody's in a bad mood because everybody else is reporting that week too. Well,
if I got to do it monthly, I mean, I can't even remember what I did yesterday, literally 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
I don't know how often in the last 3 weeks I've said to somebody, what day is it? So if you have something that you're reporting on monthly, do the report as if you were going to do it, give it to your manager, but do it weekly. So you take your spreadsheet, you do the updates, but you don't send it off. And then the next week, do that week's updates. And because you're going to look at it 4 times in a month, you will notice any mistakes that you've made, which makes your reporting more accurate. And those of us who hate reporting most are those of us who are least likely to spot mistakes and least likely to go for accuracy.
Well, the thing occurred to me is, as well, is that by doing it, for me, I think the big advantage of doing it weekly, even if it's only due monthly, would be that I would be forced to look at that project and where I am on that project on a week-by-week basis, right? Because there's many projects that get assigned to you, and then it's due in a month, and then, you know, the day before it's due, you start thinking about it, which is just awful, but it happens. It happens all the time, especially if you're really busy. You often put that thing that's due in a month, you put it toward the very end. And by doing a status report every week, even though I may not turn it in, it kind of forces me to think about it. Say, okay, I've got X amount of work to do. This is where I am relative to completion of that project. Maybe that's an indication that I need to do some more work this week before waiting for the very end. So,
yeah, and it allows you to think about the next week's workload, you know, because, you know, we all remember being in college and having that paper that was due at the end of the month. And you think, oh, I'll do it later. And then it gets to week three and you realize you've got four papers to do and you could have done it in week two and only had two each week.
Yeah, what's the fun of that though? What's the fun of that? I mean, it's doing that, you know, term paper the night before. That's just, you know, because there's so much excitement and, I don't know, it just gets the whole,
adrenaline rush of that deadline is what you go for.
It's so awesome. I love it. No, I don't. So yeah, I agree. Now, one thing, occurred to me, I'm curious what you think. As long as I'm doing the report, I know it's only due monthly, but could I just actually decide to turn it in, maybe give it to my boss or to my customers or to whoever on a weekly basis versus monthly? What do you think about that?
Absolutely. The reason I decided to report to my customers when I was recruiting every 2 days was because I noticed that if I reported to them once a week, like Wednesday or Thursday, they would be emailing me what's going on. And I realized that if I reported to them every 2 days, one, I had to know the status, and I was working on 200 jobs. So knowing the status of anyone at any one time was unlikely. So it allowed me to find the ones that had got stuck with the signature, or, you know, the candidate hadn't replied or whatever. And it meant that the clients, my customers, stayed up to date. They felt like they knew what was going on. And because they knew what was going on, they didn't hassle me. I didn't get notes from them. I didn't get phone calls from them. And as someone who feels like I've got a lot of work to do and I just want to bang through it and I don't want lots of interruptions, the fact that they stayed away from me was perfect. And they would say, oh, Wendy's great because she reports all the time. And the reason I was doing it was because it made it easier for me and because it kept them off my back.
Interesting. You know, one thing that occurred to me is a lot of times, this is not always true, but oftentimes, particularly with clients, if you're in a kind of a service organization, reporting is agreed upon. I think the tenor tone kind of is, what's the longest period the client would be willing to go without getting a status report? So people, again, it's not always true, but they negotiate monthly reporting. Not because the client wants it monthly. They prefer it weekly, but, you know, there's a negotiation around, and maybe it was even before you got into that position, right? Maybe it's a long-standing tradition, but at some point it was negotiated because there's effort associated with doing status reporting. And my experience is that extra reporting, like more frequent status updates, is very rarely not liked or unappreciated by the receiving organization. Sometimes that's not true, but in the vast majority of cases, they prefer that. You report status. You're talking about your status reporting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you report status as well, or just status?
Just status, because I was in the UK at the time, but now I would do status as
good.
Well.
Okay,
because
just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing. Okay, I'm sorry. I just shouldn't do that to you, but I just can't. I just can't help it. It's just too much fun for me. Probably listeners drive them crazy, but okay. So now let's get to your last point, if we could, because you're saying, I can't believe you're saying don't automate reporting. Is that what you're saying? Seriously?
I'm saying don't make too much automatic. If you have to count, you know, the lines of code and you want to print it out and, you know, count line by line, obviously you want to automate that, because it would be a stupid waste of time not to do that. If you're counting lots of things, or you know, reporting on a lot of statuses and there's some method by which they're updated and you just have to look at them, then obviously automate that. But the danger is that you automate it and then you have a part of your script that sends it straight to your boss and you haven't looked at it. And so there's two risks. One is that you don't know what's going on. And the second is that there's a mistake or there's some problem. And the first you know about it is when your boss gets the report and comes back and is standing at your desk saying, what is this? And you don't know what it is. You have no explanation. You have no clue. And they're saying, there's $5,000 missing. What's going on? And you're just dumbfounded. That's why the complete automation is a bad thing. You need to have some input into that system so that there's some brain power there and so that you're warned and so that problems don't go straight to other people without an explanation.
Well, and we alluded to it earlier, that reporting is as much for you as it is for your manager, right? It's a self-reminder. It provides a mechanism by which you can regularly review your work, where you are relative to the objectives of whatever you're working on. And I think your point of automating it too much, I get it. If it's so automated that you never see it, then you're really giving up the advantage it has to you in terms of reviewing your own work.
Yeah. So we're a couple of examples here. Let's say your report is counting bug reports and you are reporting the number that you fixed. And the totals from the last few weeks are 48, 49, 47, 49, 32. And that report goes off to your boss and you don't see it. And the next thing is your boss stood by your desk going, what the? Because your average is around 48 and all of a sudden there's a 32. Now, there might be a really good reason, like you were off, you were in training, you had some difficult problem that took 3 days to solve because it was a super bug. You don't know. You've sent it off without thinking about it. And if you just added that explanation to the email, and especially people forget how hard it is for bosses, particularly with big teams, to remember what's going on with everybody. So if you say, I was on vacation that day, they'll go, of course you were. But if they get the 32, they'll think, why is it on 32? And the first thing that comes to mind will not necessarily be your vacation or your training day or whatever, because he's got 10 people to remember that for. So just adding something that you think is obvious, like, he knew I was on vacation. He asked me how it was when I came back. Like, he can't possibly have forgotten, but he could possibly have forgotten. And just adding it just adds a level of security for you.
I agree. And if you're doing the report on your own, I think the numbers were like 48, 49, 47, 49, 32. I think I got that right. If you were an average of like 48 and all of a sudden it were 32 and you were producing the report manually, you'd absolutely go like, ooh, that's bad. And you would provide some kind of explanation of why that was. You wouldn't just send that out to your boss without some kind of explanation. And so if it's automated, right, and you don't look at it, then yeah, you have a little bit of a problem there. And you might be thinking, and folks may be thinking that, okay, not a big deal. My boss comes, talks to me, gets a little excited, and I explain to her why it's 32 and all is good. I'll tell you, it's reasonable to think that way. It's also reasonable to believe, you know, we're emotional creatures, and your boss has gotten excited about a miss, something you've missed. It's right. You're average 48. You're down to 32 this week. Oh, that's bad. She runs into you later. She's a little excited. You put her mind at ease, and all's done. But it's not done. There's some. You know, like Stephen Covey talks
about. It's like a residual, like piece of emotion there.
Yeah, right? There's an emotional bank account, right? So Stephen Covey talks about, in a kind of different context. There's, you know, folks have an emotional bank account, and you build up your emotional bank account by making deposits, meaning doing good things for people, right? And every once in a while, there's a mistake, and you make a withdrawal from that emotional bank account. It's not logic. It's emotion. And that average of 48 down to 32, when she gets that, and you haven't provided any context or explanation, you've made a withdrawal from that emotional bank account, whether you like it or not, and she may or may not admit it, but you've made an emotional withdrawal unnecessarily why do that? It makes no sense.
Yeah, there's enough things that will go wrong and where you'll need to withdraw that are perfectly reasonable. There's no point in adding them unnecessarily, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you don't like just, you know, create artificial withdrawals from your bank account, you know, your personal bank account, right? You don't like, oh, you know, there's $20 lying on the floor. Yeah, just like an ATM machine that just like automatically, just randomly takes out money out of your bank account and spits it out on the ground for the next, you know, for the next person who walks by. So yeah, don't do that.
Let's think of another example, still counting bugs. So let's say we have a minimum requirement of closing 40 cases a week and your weekly totals are 48, 49, 47, 49, 47, 47, 45, 46, 44. Now you're still above the 40, but there is a steady decline. Well, it's not steady because it goes up and down, but there is a decline overall over those 9 weeks.
You apply some smoothing and you've got to curve downwards, let's put it that way.
That's right. And potentially nobody will mention it to you because you're still over the minimum. And if you don't have somebody who is very attuned to what's going on as a manager, they'll say it's for 40 and, you know, dealt with and forget about it. And you may know something's wrong. You may know that there's something on going on outside of work. There may be something going on inside of work. And you may know what it is that's putting you off, or you may not know what it is. You may just be having a dip, an emotional dip. And some of getting out of those phases, which we all have, is knowing that you're in one and doing the things that are necessary to get you out of it again.
Awareness, right? So if you're going from, you know, 48 or 49, you're now kind of in the 44 range. It doesn't take a genius to figure out, should the trend continue, you're going to be at 40.
Yeah, and then you are going to have a conversation.
Right, and maybe your boss not going to say anything until 40, but again, why have that conversation at 40? Why not be able to identify by reviewing reporting, by paying attention to it, that you're in a downward trend and take corrective action now so you never hit that 40, right?
Yeah.
Instead, you're up at 50 or 51 or 52, right? So,
because that one conversation, that your boss will remember that come review time at the end of the year. And they won't remember you've had a perfect year. They will remember that 1 week where you had 40 or 39. And it has some residual emotion that is prompted later when they remember things.
Right. And if you're thinking, and some of you might, I might actually think it, or certainly years ago, I might have thought it, which is, well, I've been reporting every single week. She knows that, you know, I'm going down. I might have told her, like, you know, 3 months ago I was at 49 and, you know, it's been going down every single week. I mean, clearly she knows I'm heading toward 40 and clearly it doesn't bother her because she hasn't said anything yet. And so when I get to 40, I mean, come on, how upset can she be? She's seen the trend, folks. You know, in an ideal world, yes. And if she's on top of her game, she will have seen it. But your boss has 1,000 things going on and she may not, in fact, see it. And in fact, you may not be reporting it. You may not actually every week be showing her what it was 3 months ago and what it is today, right? Which would be a mistake.
And she might have even noticed it and not want to have that difficult conversation with you.
Right. Well, at 40, where she's going to have a conversation. So as a general rule, bosses don't like surprises. So you could say, hey, boss, is it 49? It's been slowly declining. It's 40. You shouldn't be surprised. Well, let's see, 49, you know, 49 down to 40. I mean, come on, that's significant. And don't be surprised if your boss is surprised, put it that way. And you don't want to surprise your boss. Again, another significant emotional event, that another emotional bank account withdrawal you don't need to make.
Exactly. So that's why you don't automate absolutely everything, because you need to be aware of where you are. So are you going to believe me and not write scripts for absolutely everything now?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I won't promise that, of course, I don't write scripts. I'm going to have Paul write the script. Or so her contractors write the script. But if I do automate it, I tell you what, I'll actually read it. How's that?
Good plan.
Okay, awesome. I can deal with that.
And reporting is is part of being a professional. And I have had those moments, and you've had those moments. We've all had those moments. I really don't want to do this report. It's boring and I just don't want to. But if you want to be a professional, then you have to do it. And some of any job isn't fun. And the quicker you do it, the quicker you get the reward, the more often you do it, the easier it is, and the sooner you know about problems. So it's all good, really.
That's right. And you can distinguish yourself as a professional by not railing against, you know, reporting with your boss, being professional, doing it on a regular basis, reviewing it, knowing what's in it, and being able to discuss it with your boss. Anytime you do that, you're going to distinguish yourself as a professional.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Wendy. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
All right. So long. Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long, folks.